Group Meeting, Sunday, 4th January, 1987. We stopped last time at this point. Earth is Mother. The Sun is Father, as far as everything in our lives is concerned. We are here by virtue of Earth and Sun and all that they have done for some 5,000 million years or so in order to bring us forth. And we have not only forgotten, but also we positively deny our undeniable factual relationship and oneness with our parents. But for Sun and Earth, we wouldn't be. Our Mother Earth bore us. She bears with us, though we spit upon her and stain her virgin purity by denying that we emerge out of her side. And when our little spark is cinder, she will silently enfold us again, totally, in her all-enduring, uncomplaining heart. It's a curious thing, throughout history, man has ill-treated Mother Earth. Why has he done so, you may ask? Because he is entirely self-centered, self-concerned. Self being understood as something separate from what he calls the not-self, the rest of the world. And therefore, he has behaved like that. Exploited Mother Earth. Rebellious and errant children that we are, we have run away so far and for so long that we do not know our parents for what they really are, nor do we know what wondrous possibilities are the heritage they hold for us. This heritage is the culmination of the evolution of our own consciousness, as far as we are concerned. And everything that has been brought out in the world by the activity of the Sun and the Earth combined is directed towards that purpose. For us, it spells the culmination of the development of our consciousness, the culminating point being holistic consciousness, the consciousness which rejects nothing whatsoever, but completely embraces everything. Whether we call it good or we call it evil. When we are free from reacting for or against anything whatsoever which we call good or evil, then we are totally related to the whole world. And we are at peace within ourselves. The reaction for or against anything whatsoever is the sign that we are not fully developed humans. We are still subhuman. Because by being reactive like that, we are the source of conflict, misunderstanding, misery, sorrow. Our sun and earth, and for that matter the entire universe, only vast energy sources, only phenomena of light and heat and electricity and magnetism, only radiation and matter, and all that little bit which we have so far discovered and dubbed material, and which constitutes our proud, verified scientific knowledge and our chatty philosophies. Even sublime philosophies do a good deal of chatting. Is mind or spirit, God or Brahman or the Absolute, something quite different from and to be set over and against matter? Or is this separation and conflict something imposed by our dark minds, a mere assumption, an arbitrary assertion with no warrant in truth? Might it not be that what we name as earth and sun and the universe holds within itself every new temporal manifestation through the immense rhythms of the evolutionary process, and that the eternity of the timeless unitary withinness will unfold its beauty in countless forms of endless variety through unmeasured time? Time is necessary, not because it is an actuality in itself, but because we, being constituted as we are not conscious in terms of eternity and infinity, but we are able to be conscious in terms of time. And time spells succession, one thing after another. Time spells birth and death, pleasure and pain, all the dualities of the world come through time. But because time is unmeasured in actuality, we, the human species, can utilize time to come to the end of all time. Here and now, whilst the organism lives in space and time. And that is the only immortality that you and I can ever realize. There is no other immortality, no other continuity of a self-conscious, isolated entity. An entity is manifest. I am a manifestation. You are a manifestation. Every manifestation knows only birth and death. And what we do in between those two extremes determines whether we shall realize our full humanness here and now, realize immortality and the meaning of immortality here and now, and with it, that peace which passes understanding. Because if we do realize that peace which passes understanding, like the sun which thoughtlessly, carelessly, meaning without care, just pours out its light and life and heat to all of us, we become like that to this world. Our knowledge today is but a tiny fragment still, an almost invisible speck of dust in the universe. Yet it has made such an astounding breakthrough our ignorance barrier that it has dematerialized matter. Matter is immaterial energy. To our minds as they are, energy is still a mystery, and how energy becomes matter is still a mystery. Science has discovered in this century, after the 3.5 million years or so that man has lived on the globe, that energy and matter are interconvertible. Energy becomes matter, matter returns back to energy, primordial energy. How this happens, nobody knows. But it is curious how, as far back as 3,500 or 4,000 years ago, those great Upanishadic sages in India realized this through living the religious life. Science knows it through scientific investigation, but they knew it through investigation of oneself, the human being. And therefore, treading the path objectively, asking the question objectively, what is ultimate reality, they declared it was Brahman. Brahman is the objective word, of which the subjective counterpart is Atma, the spirit, or the immortal soul, if you like to call it, provided you don't consider the immortal soul as a separate entity. If Brahman were to say I, then that is the meaning of Atma. The absolute all says I am. And that saying means that I am the eternal immortal spirit, the totality. Today, how far or how different is modern mathematics from mind? Not very far. Modern mathematics is an extraordinary thing altogether. Today we have come to this edge. Our today is a million-year-old day. Today, we who peer over the edge, trembling before the abyss, are still not in communion. Hence, our tormented souls, our troubled bodies, our fears and hates and wars, our gods and our devils in deadly conflict, and our own selves, the lacerated victims, the terrible field of that sorrow and destruction. Will tomorrow then, a million year old tomorrow, be the day of divine knowledge? Shall we strive for enlightenment tomorrow and achieve communion, earn our Sabbath, rest in Nirvana? Vain thought and devilish desire of an ignorant egoist of confused mind. We do not achieve or attain anything. We who are transcendence embodied go through certain stages of experience in that transcendence, by that transcendence. on account of which transcendence realizes its own transcendence all the way through. There is nothing whatsoever for me, now or hereafter. There never was anything for a me before the now. You see, we have a strong shopkeeping aspect. We want something for our money. I have lived a good life. I want the third seat in the fourth row in the courts of heaven for my goodness. But if I'm a bad chap, dear God, please continue to be a good chap and let me off. Nothing doing. Poor God is helpless to save me from the hell I have created. And serve me damn well right. The infinite, the transcendent, is not an object, not a goal to be grasped or won. And the infinite, the eternal, the transcendent, can never be grasped by the finite, the temporal, the mortal. It's impossible. You cannot storm the ramparts of heaven. Try it if you wish. But you'd be an awful idiot if you wished and tried. What happened to Lucifer? Poor chap, he's still boiling. We do not awaken to it, to the realization of transcendence, as an experience or a state, but by being fully awake to what is here and now, and not letting go or running away from it, the eternity of the here now is embodied in every fleeting moment of time, and the divine glory blazes in the transience of temporal manifestation. Communion is where there is complete attention. And communion means that transcendence through you, the particular organism, or me, the particular organism, has realized its own eternity and infinity through a speck of manifestation. If one can really, one begins, of course, by seeing something like that intellectually. But if one lives the life, therefore, and according to the consequences of seeing it intellectually, which means living the religious life, then that realization can be there, can be present. That's my place. There were a few through the millennia who realized the oneness of the manifested with the unmanifested. The unmanifested, the transcendent, is not separate from, it is at one with all this which is manifested, which is mortal. Because it subsumes all this. If it did not subsume it, there'd be no way of release into that transcendent. So there is what we may call that nature, which is the supreme, the ultimate, and this nature, which is us and the mortal manifested. The few knew the oneness of this nature and that nature. But this unity, realized in the experience of communion, defied the power of the mind to experience, to express it in speech. When the mystic realizes the state of communion, he is utterly silent. He cannot speak, he cannot put into words what that communion is. All words, all languages are but symbols. They are shadows of the truth, not the substance of the truth. And as shadows, they can mislead. And very often they do mislead. Very rarely a shadow, a picture, is a fairly good representation of the substantial reality. Very rarely. The way to that nature lay through this nature. And that is one of the meanings, I would say, of what we call the mercy of God. That although we represent the shadow, the unreal, it is through this very organism that we learn our lessons. The organism is our best teacher. No other organism is your best teacher. For the simple reason that each and every single manifested thing is unique. When you discover your uniqueness and that uniqueness functions through you, it teaches you and you learn as you never could learn from any other manifestation of uniqueness. So you see, the marvel and the beauty of the human being is something which one can never imagine. Sun and earth, man's parents and continual preservers, the starry heavens and endless space, taught man his early lessons with terrible severity as well as with exquisite tenderness and joy. Man's school was this nature. Tempest and flood, volcano and earthquake shook him, hurt him, terrified him, destroyed him. Beast of prey, insect, reptile, and his own kind heaped anxiety and sorrow upon him. Disease, drought, hunger, and thirst assailed him. Man's parents were harsh. It could not and cannot be otherwise, for this is how they are. This is how, through their own issue, man, they come to knowledge, and with knowledge, control and change by deliberation and choice, a growing power and activity of the withinness. You see, they take a very common and simple example. It's such a nasty day today, we say. Why? Because it's raining. It's been raining all the day, it's dark, it is gloomy, and so forth. Is it the fault of the earth, of the climate, that it is so? Or is it my fault that I react in this manner? Can't I learn to love the rain when it falls? Without rain, what would happen to us? We'd all dry up completely. You see, it's like that. If we can take everything that happens in the world, not only to us personally, but to everybody, if we can take everything in our stride with that kind of accepting understanding, where would wars be? Where would even courts of justice be? Happy lessons also there were, and in rich variety, so much so that the lure of ephemeral happiness, pleasure, success, has blinded man to truth. It has ranged him on the side of pleasure against pain, perpetuating in his psyche a state of conflict between pleasure and pain, with no prospect of the resolution of that conflict. Hence, his most fervent aspirations in the past and even today were and are escapist, couched as preferential choice in favor of one of the terms of a duality against the other term of the duality. Against the fact of sorrow, insecurity, conflict and death, he arrayed his longing for bliss, security, peace and immortality. Seeking escape from the undesirable to the desirable, he struggled with might and main for his mind-created goals. All these goals are projections out of our own minds. They have nothing to do with absolute reality. They serve a temporary purpose insofar as they urge us to investigate, to discover, and in the process of the investigation and the discovery, there comes at last realization of living humanly. Thereby he only perpetuated conflict. The spirit world of his imagination, and we do it still, was peopled by dark and evil powers arrayed against the gods of light, by titans and demons, by the shades of the ancestors, by all kinds of beings. It was important to communicate with them and cement alliance with the desirable powers through placatory rites and sacrificial ceremonies, for this was the insurance of security and happiness in the hereafter, an imaginary, mythical hereafter. It is imaginary and mythical for this reason particularly, that it is thought and felt by the individual that he as an individual entity who knows himself as John Smith or Mary Brown is going to survive the death of the organism and experience this blissful state. This is the great mistake. But through the millennia have arisen the few. To worship the gods, to be good and pious was not enough. They were in anguish because it seemed to them that death lorded it over all life. They saw sin, they saw suffering, which they could not explain except by attributing it to the will of the gods or the malice of demons. Had life any purpose, any meaning? Were they the immortals, or were they a figment of man's imagination? The immortals, as the human race has conceived of them, is just a figment of imagination. There are no such separate entities that are immortals. What is immortal is integral part and parcel of the unitary whole. It cannot be separate. That is the whole thing. If this terrible separativeness and isolativeness, which bedevils our consciousness right from the beginning, throughout our lives, which is the cause of all these wishful, imaginary things, they are just shadows. They are not real. Here and now, live the good life. There is no alternative to it. But you must discover the meaning of good for yourself, because you are unique, and your goodness will be expressed in your unique terms and not in the terms of what anybody else tells you or any holy book tells you. Deep was their distress, but they were great souls. They were the noblest children of their parents, though sun and earth knew not how they created them so. It's a great mystery how this endless uniqueness is brought out in every little particular manifestation. Stirred to the depths by a divine discontent, they chafed at the infuriatingly restrictive limitations life had imposed upon them. Passionately they felt that if only they could burst through the thorny bounds of ignorance, fling away the fetters of mortality, and triumph over the Lord of Death, they would assuredly win the beatific experience of the immortal and realize here now that freedom and serenity which is ineffable bliss. That indeed would be fulfillment. And not merely fulfillment for them, but the fulfillment of transcendence through them as the vehicle of transcendence. You know how, for instance, in the Christian prayers, the glory is unto God, not unto man. The fulfillment and everything is unto the ultimate reality. They succeeded. They realized the silence. On emergence into the silence, they entered the sea of liberation, the kingdom of heaven, nirvana. This silence must be really understood. You know how the human race chatters incessantly. The monkeys do that too, very successfully, and less harmfully. Just think of the chatter that goes on around us, by us, everywhere. And what sort of a chatter is it? Is it one which is of true love for all that is, compassion, true wisdom? The without had given no final answer. The within by itself knew the humiliation of defeat. But when the without, the sense activities and the discursive mind, was in a pacified condition, and the very depth of the withinness, unresisting and wholly open, throbbed in perfect rhythm with the without, separative self-consciousness vanished, and there was no separate entity, the I, to obstruct the total harmony. Being in communion, the real was realized. In this state of communion, the discursive mind, which is the noisemaker, is silent. Watch. I think you practice meditation, most of you do, if not all of you, and so forth. Watch the thought process. Watch that incessant chatter that goes on. All the conventionally laid down meditations, the conventional prayers and so forth, are centered round the self and what the self desires. If it is a prayer or a meditation which is an offering of oneself to God or whatever you feel is the supreme, you are identifying yourself with that God. If that God were to tell you, "My dear fellow, I love you so much, I'm going to send you to hell," what are you going to do? If you are cheeky enough, you'll tell God to go to hell. You won't go there. But is that loving God? There was one mystic in the history of mysticism, an Islamic one, Rabia. One of her prayers was, "O Lord, if it be thy happiness that I should suffer the tortures of hell, please let it be so." Now, whether that was rhetoric or just clever writing, I don't know. But she was recognized as a great saint. Now, our prayers and meditations and so forth, which are all laid down, what are they like? What are they about? I'm not suggesting stop your meditation all. If you practice meditation, do practice it. Learn from it. You have chosen to do it for yourself, right? Carry on, boy or girl, as the case may be. See, carry on. If it gives you comfort, if it gives you strength, well, it's a help. If you are in need of comfort and strength. But don't be deceived that this is the real thing, the ultimate thing. Your comfort is within yourself. What did Jesus say before the crucifixion? "If I go not away from you, the Comforter cannot come to you." And the Comforter means the strength giver. Con fortis, with strength. Fors fortis, the Latin strength. That's the Comforter. And that strength is within you, because transcendence itself is embodied in you. Uniquely.